The biggest hurdle that we have to overcome is people still not believing that plastic is bad. While we know it, there's still the general community that thinks, well, it's 100% recyclable, so it's not bad. Our first 10 years, we did a lot of field marketing. We did a lot of just getting in front of people and explaining them the plastic pollution problems. So for the first half of our life, awareness and education has been the biggest hurdle.
This is Evolve CPG, a community of purpose-driven brand leaders who not only believe in better, but actively pursue it. That's better products, better brands, and better leadership for a better world. Join our online community where we're going further, faster, together at community.evolvecpg.com. I'm your host, Gage Mitchell, founder and creative director of Modern Species, a sustainable brand design agency helping better brands grow and scale their impact. On this episode, we're speaking with Rob Keenan, Chief Revenue Officer of Boxed Water is Better, about the problems with plastic and the difficulties of bringing change to the market.
My name is Rob Keenan. I am the Chief Revenue Officer at Boxed Water is Better, which is a sustainable alternative to plastic water bottles and aluminum cans for the grab-and-go water market. The things that make us kind of special is we were the leader in the sustainable market coming out with a unique carton. We obsess at making our water, first and foremost, making our water pure, and it has won numerous awards for its taste. But the other things that make us a little bit different is that we help the planet. We've been planting trees and cleaning beaches. We put a lot of our resources against tree planting. We've planted over 1.2 million trees in the national forests completely for free. We say instead of celebrities, the forests, the trees are our celebrities, and we make a big difference that way.
Yeah, we'll have to get some of those trees in your ads, like drinking some boxed water and talking about how delicious it is. Nice. Good little visual plug for those watching on YouTube, which if you didn't know, we are on YouTube as well, but Rob's holding up the boxed water in his hands.
One of our new flavors.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, new lemon flavor.
Nice.
Yeah.
And I noticed awesome. I was just, when I was flying to and from Expo West recently, I noticed that boxed water was on the Alaska Airlines planes now. When you walk through first class, everyone's already got their boxed water ready to go. So I thought that was fun that I saw that before recording this.
That's hilarious. Just as an FYI, again, this thank God for them. We've been working with them for over a year. We should be in all planes now. They're slowly rolling us out logistically. We started it in first class. And this is insane. This is being plastic blind. They went through or go through 1.8 million pounds of plastic just in those little plastic bottles that you see as you walk through first class. You know, over the course of the year, that's almost 2 million pounds, which is over the weight of 33 737 jets. And so by switching to boxed water, they have completely stopped, you know, they've stopped creating the demand for 1.8 million pounds of plastic. So they've been phenomenal. They are the first in the industry to do that. And we're hoping that other airlines will come along because plastic is everywhere. It's ubiquitous. You don't even think because it just comes in these little containers at a time. You don't even realize that it's over, you know, just the United States alone, there's over 69 billion bottles that are being used every year, and only 40% of them are actually getting recycled. So about 9 million pounds, you know, 9 million tons go in the ocean or in the waste every year. It lasts 700 years before it breaks down. It's not biodegradable. It never really comes back. While it's breaking down over those 700 years, it is actually... And you probably know this, you know, animals and sea animals think it's food. So you've got whales and animals dying because their stomachs are full with plastic. And you think about it, 12 minutes of drinking water, which is the average time the person uses to drink a bottle of water, leads to 700 years of pollution. That's just insane math.
Yeah. And I just heard someone.
One more thing to put it into perspective, because people you throw around that it lasts 700 years. If you actually think about it, that means like Leonardo da Vinci drinking a bottle of water and throwing it away, it would only just now be breaking down. Mind-boggling.
Yeah, that is.
So I'm sorry. I'm very passionate about trying to get plastic out of the plastic and aluminum is out of the bicycle.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good jump right into some statistics. And one statistic I heard recently was that every human is consuming about the amount of like a credit card's worth of microplastics on a daily basis. I think it was the stat. Maybe it was weekly. I think it was daily, though. That's just mind blowing because it's not just water bottles that break down and the fish and birds and others are other things like that we're eating. But even like if you read Cradle to Cradle or kind of one of those books, like almost everything around us is made out of plastic these days, whether you know it or not. And it microabrades like your clothing, your couch, your whatever. And that ends up in the air and you're breathing it in, or like it ends up in your food system. It ends up just everywhere because it doesn't fully go away. It just breaks down into these little microparticles that you end up consuming.
Yeah, it's in your water. It's in the food that you eat because the fish are eating the plastic and it becomes part of the meat on the animals. It's horrendous. And again, plastic is a good thing for long-term items, but it's just become so prolific. It's everywhere, like you said. And what's even scarier is that while you and I talk about how bad it is and we should stop doing it, the plastic industry has planned for their plastic production to quadruple in the next 5 to 10 years. So they think that there's nothing, you know, it's just going to keep going up. And so it's up to us to prove them wrong, factually. I mean, they're building more plants more than ever.
Yeah. And shout out to our, I think it was episode number one, actually, of this podcast. Sandra Ann Harris was on the show talking about her book, Say Goodbye to Plastic, which is kind of a story about her journey in figuring out that plastic was kind of in everything and amounting to a bunch of waste in the school system and other things, and decided to do something about it and created plastic-free lunchboxes, Eco Lunchboxes, her company. But she creates a bunch of plastic-free containers because even containers, you know, whether they're plastic-lined or the lid is plastic or the whole thing is plastic and all that ends up being waste, not only waste, but maybe even leach toxins, et cetera. So there's a lot of momentum, I think, coming around this like plastic-free movement. And with what was it called? Repurpose Global, I think, is the company that's helping some organizations like offset their plastic use by cleaning out the ocean or something like that, waste in the ocean. So there's some progress.
Yeah,
progress around awareness, at least.
Oh, my gosh. I am extraordinarily optimistic because I'm unfortunately extraordinarily old. So I remember when this wasn't even a conversation. This wasn't on anybody's radar. And
whenever I was just like, the convenience of plastic.
Yeah, exactly. It's a miracle. What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah. Why wash a dish? Just throw your plate away.
And people now are, I mean, especially you get under the age of 40, and everybody's aware of it, the repurposing. And there's so many great alternatives now. But again, back in the olden days, if you wanted to do something that was green or that was sustainable, you had to sacrifice. You had to buy some plant-based food. You know, basically, you're eating a carrot and lettuce and not enjoying something. You're not enjoying a hamburger. Now you've got 3 or 4 choices of meatless, or hell, 50 choices, but the 3 that come to mind of meatless burgers. So you don't have to sacrifice. The same thing with, like, in the past, if you wanted to do something like give up a plastic bottle, there weren't reusables. There wasn't Yeti or Swell or anything like that. Now there's that. If you can't get a hold of that, then there's a boxed water is better. There is a sustainable alternative. So again, electric. If you want an electric car, Teslas are cool looking. So the whole idea of adding design to something that has a purpose means that you don't really have to compromise the design with the sustainability. And that's kind of another one of our premises. Like the design community, the fashion community, the artistic community has come to us because we've got such a clean, unique package, and it's sophisticated. It's like I always say, we're like Fiji without the guilt, or Fiji without the pollution. Because you see us at runway shows, you see us at the Oscars and all these kind of cool events.
So you do have some celebrities besides trees.
Well, we don't pay. That's what the other thing that's cool. So we have celebrities. We don't pay them all. I mean, so Ellen DeGeneres carries us on her show, and she's wonderful, right? And her people came to us because of this reforestation. This was during the massive forest fires that were going on in California like 3 or 4 years ago. They happen every year, but this is when they were really bad. And she said, I'm removing plastic from my stage and I see you guys do reforestation. So I want it. And her people were like, send us some cases. And we said, we would love to. We'll give you a discount. We'll give you like 50% off. And they said, you don't understand. We're going to put you on the show and, you know, this is worth hundreds of millions. And I said, well, I appreciate that, but you don't understand. Our dollars go to tree planting and we don't want you to be promoting us if you're not vested, if you don't have skin in the game. And immediately that went up to her and she's like, hell yeah. So everybody that you see that carries our water, they're paying for it. Jim Gaffigan carries it. They pay for it at home. Ellen DeGeneres. We see some of the Kardashians on our subscription list. So, and again, it's cool because I wouldn't feel good if we were just saying, here's $1 million, you know, promote our brand. They have skin in the game and I respect them for that.
Yeah, that makes total sense because it's not just we're helping you, your business gain value and sales and therefore you're going to become wealthier. Like this is actually for a mission. It's like joining a nonprofit board and not being a donor. It's like if you care enough to sit on the board, why aren't you writing a check as well? I mean, come on.
Yeah, either you're in this for the right reasons or you're not in this for the right reasons. And that way we can keep our conscience clear. And so, no, it's been great. We've got a lot of supporters who are in it for the right reasons.
Yeah. Well, for anyone listening that doesn't know the backstory behind boxed water, let's talk a little bit more about like why boxed water is better. So you and I, before we started recording, were geeking out on some different stats and stuff, but let's dive back into that conversation a little here. So obviously there's a problem with plastic. Hopefully a lot of people know that, but we could touch a little bit on that plastic about all the waste. And, you know, we already kind of discussed some of that, but so why boxed? Like you could have gone aluminum, you could have gone reusable, you could have just told people don't buy bottled water, but like boxed water was the solution. So where did that solution come from and why is it better?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. It's right on our box. Boxed water is better. So people ask that all the time. And I'll start with, we humbly called the company, and this was before me, so I don't take any credit for it. There's a couple of young guys, our current CEO, who all got together. And frankly, they were at during the course of a year, they went to Lollapalooza. And at the end of the concert, there's just plastic everywhere. This is 13 years ago, before anybody was even thinking about plastic being a problem, because it's 100% recyclable. What could possibly go wrong? And we're in the Midwest, and so they were thinking about different alternatives. And one of them was a carton because of the milk and the dairy industry. Now, this is different than a milk carton, and we can talk about that later. But there's benefits to this because it doesn't need to be in the refrigeration section. That's why we tweaked it over. But they were looking at things that were truly sustainable. And the name of the company is Boxed Water is Better. It's not Boxed Water is Best. We freely admit that using your Swell, using your refillable, using your Yeti, that is the best. But it goes back to, as long as 69 billion bottles are being made and used every year, you know, we think of us as like a bridge product, where if we're out of business in 5 years, then we'll be happy, because if everybody's walking around with their Swell bottles, then we're happy. But in the meantime, there's a place for us in this world. The key things about the package itself that are different, and we go to our website, boxwaterisbetter.com, and look for the life cycle analysis. We're the only company in this industry in the carton industry that's done a life cycle analysis. It compares the extraction, the production, and the end of life of a carton, a plastic bottle, aluminum can, and then a plastic bottle that would have been sourced from the imported, like an Evian or a Fiji. And while we've been talking about recyclability for the last 50 years, and that's important, just as important, or actually even more important in some cases, that the effects on this planet of the extraction of oil and aluminum to make their cans has three times the carbon impact than our carton. So just to talk a little bit about why we're better. First of all, we're 92% made from renewable resources, so trees. Trees can be replanted. We source the trees from well-managed forests. So we're not going to the national parks and cutting down old growth.
Yeah.
There are little farms that just grow and regrow trees, and they're managed and monitored by the FSC. So we have a sustainable source. I always say you can't replant oil and you can't replant bauxite, which is what aluminum is made from. So those are truly not sustainable resources. So number one, the product itself is better. Even the cap, and then there's a plastic film on this, even those come from tree pulp, which is the tree waste from the newspaper, from the paper industry, primarily the newspaper industry. So, and this was a new introduction a year ago. We introduced this as a new innovation. A lot of companies use sugarcane oil, but that's a for-profit crop. We wanted to use something that was actually waste. So we found a way to use tree oil from the pulp waste. So 92%, which is the highest amount of renewable content in the industry. That's number one. Number two, trees. Number two, because you can replant trees. Number three, when you think about our carton, it ships flat. So you use less fossil fuels when you're shipping it from point A to point B before it's filled. But also, it's not molded. Think of it as origami. It's folded. And so things that you don't think about, when you blow mold plastic into a bottle, when you smelt, roll, and create the heat to mold an aluminum can, regardless if it's recycled or not, you are using tremendous amount of electricity, a tremendous amount of heat, and creating a tremendous amount of pollution. And again, we have half the carbon footprint. The thing that the aluminum industry doesn't tell you is that they use about a third of the electricity in this world in order to smelt and create the cans that they're making. And they talk about infinite recyclability, but the fact is that only less than 46% of their cans are actually being recycled. So there's a huge environmental impact for ozone depletion, climate change, and carbon footprints that's being done just by the creation and the extraction and the production of the cans and the bottles compared to a little paper carton. And then, recycling, obviously, I think we're tied with them on recycling in the sense of we're all 100% recyclable. One of our company's main efforts now is to try to get more areas to take our cartons. So right now, 62% of Americans live near a place where there's curbside recycling. So that's good. But we need to get that to 100%. Because that's the key to the door for us. And frankly, it's up from, and so it's 62% of Americans now. It was less than 50 about 5 years ago. So it is heading in the right direction, which is great.
Yeah. And we need to get there faster, I think, though. Because the infrastructure, our systems in the U.S., whether it's the energy kind of systems that kind of prevent widespread use of renewable energies and things like that, and not having like battery systems on all of our power plants. And, there's just so many problems, right? But then also one of the rants I often go off on is this whole sustainable packaging problem. It's not necessarily that sometimes it's more, there's a cost prohibitive thing to get like the right material or whatever. But the biggest problem is just the infrastructure. Like every city, every state, every region is kind of different in what they provide their citizens, or even what they take and what they won't take, and then what they do with it afterwards. And it's just such a broken, distributed system that it's hard to do it, roll anything out nationally.
And you peel back the onion, and it's a good rant to have because this infrastructure has been built over decades, right? So it is set up to go in one direction. And when you're a challenger brand, you're trying to, you're basically breaking this down. And you're right. Like the more you learn about the kind of the recycling industry and where the profits come from, the more you realize is that it's completely broken. And that's one of the biggest challenges I think we have as a country is trying to break down something that's so deeply rooted and rebuild it for a new generation. Like our biggest issue, I'll give one example. We were in a college or a university out east. And they were great because we cost a little bit more. So you have to make the effort to say, I'm willing to pay a little bit more in order to carry you, because plastic and aluminum are cheap, and that's why people use them. And so we're a little more expensive. And we were rolling with this community, and the kids were digging it, and everybody was excited. And all of a sudden, the MRF, which is the recycling facility, and then the waste transporter said, "Hey, you know, it was okay when you guys were in like one of the stores on this, but now that you're in the cafeterias and you're everywhere, we don't make as much money on your waste because there's not as much of a secondary market on your waste as we do from a plastic or an aluminum can. So." Well, you have the facility, you have the ability to transport it to a sorter. They're like, "Yeah, but it all comes down to financials. We can, but we don't want to." And you're like, "Oh my gosh." So yeah. So that's actually one of the things we're working heavily on with various communities is how to fix, you know, you get in this business to sell some water and to save some dolphins, and you end up dealing with municipalities and MRFs and all these back end things that you never thought you'd be doing. But you need to in order to make the whole circular system
work. Yeah, I think that's something that a lot of people don't think about.
I hope this is interesting.
Yeah, well, I'm interested in it, so hopefully everyone else is too. But
okay, I know I bore the heck out of my wife and kids with this stuff. But I think it's fascinating because it's all underneath your feet, right? It's all around you and you don't even know it. It's like the Matrix world all around you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those things that people don't know about and or can't wrap their mind around. It's hard enough to get the general population to know what is and isn't recyclable just from a technical standpoint. Like technically this material is recyclable, but then you add in form. Like something that would be recyclable in a rigid form isn't recyclable in a flexible form, like shopping bags or flexible packaging, right? And then you add in the confusion around the chasing arrows kind of symbol that a lot of people are like, "Well, what kind of plastic and which ones are recyclable and which ones aren't?" And it's like different across the country, you know, it's like, and then you got the catch-all category of number 7 plastic, which basically just means, "Oh, all the leftover bits and pieces, some of it's even like bioplastic and whatever." And like, it basically means nothing anymore. And then not only that, but then you've got these material recovery facilities that again are different across the country and take different things and won't take different things. And then you alluded to the aftermarket, which is kind of like the driving factor. Like we'd like to think all these recycling facilities are doing it out of the goodness of their heart because it should be done, but it is a business, right? You need to somehow fund this. So they need to then be able to take whatever they've taken in and sell it to someone else. And then you've got rules around like how pure your lot of recycled materials needs to be in terms of like contamination of materials that made it into that stream that aren't.
And then the contamination factor.
And then you get like China closing down a lot of their recycling facilities and programs because all the pollution. And then it's like all of a sudden that kind of put like a hard stop on a lot of the world's recycling because where do we send all this stuff now? And I think we're waiting for the next wave of innovation of someone to figure out efficient ways to recycle materials that has a good market for those materials, you know. But it's just this, you like, again, the general person's just thinking, "Oh, is this recyclable or not?" And like that one question opens up like books and books and movies worth of like complexity that's hard to wrap your mind around.
Well, and the normal person is like, "Is this recyclable or not? Because I want to watch Netflix." Okay, and I'm moving on. So the challenge in our world is like for just a little boxed water is to try to get on their radar and do it in a digestible way so that they and in a quick way. Because I mean, think about it. I got a laundry list of things are on my mind, right? I got the Ukraine on my mind. I've got Netflix on my mind. This is important to me, but it's not in the grand scheme of things. I got to go pick up my kids. So the hard thing, and just to circle back, the system has been built over decades, and that's why it's so complicated. And it is, you know, many, many layers of things and people's lives and profitability. I had a meeting with somebody who once said to me, and they were in a supermarket, they were a buyer, and they said, "Listen, Rob, I like your product. I get what you're doing. I think this is a great idea. Two things. Number one, 90% of my profit of my grocery store comes from the plastic aisle, the water and soda aisle. And so if I put you on, I'm going to remind people that plastic is bad and that's not good. I don't want them to think that because they're about, and number two, even though they want an alternative, some might, but it makes me look bad. And number two, I don't know how you're going to perform versus I know how a Dasani is going to perform." And he said, "At the end of the day, my bonus is based off of this and my bonus is paying for my daughter's college." So this all goes back to the human level of, I, as a person, and I said, well, wait, I went on your website and it talks about the Green Initiative. He's like, yeah, at the end of the year, our company is going to write a check and donate to a Green Initiative and check the box. And that's why we've got a little green leaf on our website. But again, my bonus is based on this and my daughter's college is based on it. I'm like, I get it.
But couldn't stocking boxed water be part of that check writing? Like, yeah, maybe it won't sell as much as Dasani up front, but by taking that chance and doing the right thing, like that's part of your mission. But like, I guess they're, you know, it's easy to write a check. It's harder to walk the talk, right?
It's a lot easier to write a check, especially, and it's a lot harder to put your bonus, to put your, you know, your job on the line like that. Now, I will say this was 5 years ago. 5 years ago, I was still trying to convince people why plastic was bad. Now everybody knows it, right? So this was a long time ago. That particular chain does carry us now and has made the leap. But I think the point is that even when you look at a website and a certain company is talking about being green, when you're a challenger brand and you're trying to change something that has been ingrained in a community for 50 years, sometimes it comes down to a real personal, a person saying, either I'm going to make my bonus or I'm not. And you don't think about that when you're thinking about the bigger picture of, well, why wouldn't everybody do this?
Yeah, that's like when an entrepreneur is like, I'm going to start this business because it's a better product or it's better for people, it's better for the planet, it's better in general, right? And they believe in it and it is probably better. But then when you try to put it into an existing market, existing supply chain, existing whatever, and if it like breaks anything in that supply chain, you're going to be pissing off like half the supply chain wherever it got broken and beyond, right? So it's you, even if it like, because it's better almost, you're inherently going to upset the status quo, and that's going to cause challenges. And you said boxed water has been around for 13 years now. I remember seeing some of the earlier conversations around just awareness around, like you said, plastic. What have you seen as the biggest challenges for boxed water, from whether it's it costs a little bit more, whether it's that awareness around plastic, whether it's what we were just talking about, like, I don't know how this is going to sell. Is it more of a consumer thing? Like consumers don't know what to do with it, or it's such a unique form that they're like unsure that that's the same as even bottled water. Like, I don't know. What have you seen as some of the biggest challenges?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And over the years, we've made a lot of mistakes, and there's a lot of challenge. I think the number one thing that comes up is that it's different and people need to wrap their heads around it. I mean, that's one of the good things, is that we've had customers say, yeah, it's great because it starts a conversation. So we're in a hotel called the Lapeer Hotel in California. And they said, this is great because people talk about it. And all of a sudden the light bulb goes on that they drink plastic at home and they drink plastic elsewhere. But it is something that it's jarring because it's different. The biggest hurdle that we have to overcome is people still not believing that plastic is bad. While we know it, there's still the general community that thinks, well, it's 100% recyclable, so it's not bad. Our first 10 years, we did a lot of field marketing. We did a lot of just getting in front of people and explaining them the plastic pollution problem. So for the first half of our life, awareness and education has been the biggest hurdle. Now it's been great. And I actually go back to when the National Geographic came out with a whole plastic issue, and then 60 Minutes did a whole show on plastic, all of a sudden it's part of the mainstream conversation. So now our hurdle is really getting to the buyers to make this choice, because we do cost more. And so breaking down that barrier of, well, yeah, I think it's great, but do I really want to pay 30% more? When again, it's a fight between my P&L and what my consumers want. And again, all you need is facts to be able to argue that. Like, we've done tests in hotels where we've gone up against some plastic competitors. We outsell plastic 2-1, even if we're a dollar more. So the consumers, if you're in the right spot, the consumers will buy. So this is a high-end boutique hotel, and they look at it and go, yeah, I'm willing to make that choice. Those have been the biggest challenges that we have. Now we're dealing with, now that we've become more successful, now we're dealing with the recycling infrastructure. Now we're dealing with the MRFs, and we're dealing with groups that again, we'll take plastic, we'll take aluminum, but we don't want to take the carton. But every time you see a challenge, you see a ray of hope. The ray of hope here is that there's a company called Everboard. Everboard basically makes particle board for construction, and they use paper and renewable materials. So there is, and if you want to be a LEED certified building, Everboard is one of the materials you can use to become LEED certified. So it goes back to, there is now going to be a growing demand, which will improve the price, which will improve the recyclability. And so those are some of the challenges that we face. I would say that, like I said, every time we see one, there is a ray of hope. There is something positive coming out of it. Alaska Airlines has been a huge partner with us because they're getting it into, I think, 20 million hands every year and establishing that conversation that, hey, plastic is bad, paper is good. And so we're able to leverage ideas around them. And that's been phenomenal.
Like, just awareness, you know, is when you're a pioneer kind of trying to change an industry, you might spend your first 5 to 10 years or something just trying to raise awareness around this thing, whether it's like insect protein or hemp or, you know, mushrooms. Like, there's just been so many people that for the past 10, 20, whatever years have been trying to get the consumers to be aware of these things, and they're just now picking up, right? So like, as Boxwater being the first one moving in this space, it started a lot of conversations. Now a lot of alternative to plastic water companies are starting to bubble up. So it's obviously starting to take off, but they're moving into aluminum or like sometimes recyclable aluminum, like one time use. Some of them are trying to be a reusable aluminum bottle, which I question from a consumer behavior standpoint, because I'm pretty sure at this point, most consumers who are interested in sustainability probably have 15 Swell or, you know, whatever bottles in their cabinet. So am I going to buy or another renewable at the convenience store? I don't know. Like, that's a question mark, but anyway, there's all sorts of alternatives. So like, that awareness is done, but now you get to work on the bigger problems. But that's like running a business, because I've been running mine for 13 years too. It's like, there's always a new challenge, right? Because it's like, right when you solve this challenge, now it's like, oh crap, now there's this other challenge. Either the world changed or your business changed, whether it's size or focus or whatever. But there's always something new to be working on. So you're kind of at that moment where you get to shift more into the infrastructure, which is cool.
I'll be honest with you. You brought up the exact, I guess, one of the biggest hurdles I've got right now is exactly that. So we spent 13 years talking about plastic pollution, what a problem it is. And your Cokes and your Dasani's and then a lot of other companies have said, yep, plastic is terrible. Here's aluminum as an alternative. Because if you think about it, most of them already make aluminum canned soda and whatnot, so they don't have to change their capital requirements. And now they're just filling things up in aluminum cans. And aluminum isn't sustainable. It's not a solution, but that hasn't trickled down to the consumer yet. So now all of a sudden there's the new shiny thing in the corner that they're promoting with their $8 billion to say, hey, this is the way to go. And so that's my next hurdle, is that I'm hoping to God it doesn't take another 10 years for people to realize that no, aluminum is just as bad, if not worse. So like you said, after, there's always another hurdle that's coming up. There's always something that pops up that you're going to need to come across.
Yeah, that reminds me of the organic movement, which, you know, started a long ways back and was kind of a scrappy hippie-led movement for a while, and now it's reaching mainstream a bit more. But they also had a similar thing where like organic was the path they were trying to pave. But then non-GMO popped up. And yes, that's one important issue within organic, but that distracted a lot of consumers and made people think like, oh, okay, well, all I have to do is buy non-GMO and that's just as good as organic, right? And so it created this like, but wait, hold on. Yes, that's important. But the bigger issue is like, we need to shift people to organic and ideally regenerative organic or whatever. But it took some of the steam out of the organic movement because it confused consumers. They were thinking, oh, I'm doing the right thing by buying aluminum or by buying non-GMO or whatever. But it distracts them from the long-term goal for a little while.
Yeah. But the pendulum always swings.
It's amazing how, you know, we can all be on the same journey of like trying to do better for the world stuff, but we trip each other up all the time, like unintentionally, intentionally, whatever. But it's like, it happens so often.
Well, I was going to say it, but the good news is these conversations are happening more and more than ever. They didn't happen back in the 80s or the 90s when I was. So we'll get there. But yeah, we stumble along the way.
Yeah. And for the infrastructure you were talking about, like one of the challenges isn't just making sure something is recyclable, but then making sure it gets recycled. And part of that is making sure there's a market for the recycled materials afterwards. So you were talking about like building materials and things. What is like the current byproduct or end result or whatever of recycling paper? Is it normally just get converted straight into cardboard? Or is it, I think some of it maybe if it's the right quality, if it's like white and whatever, it can get turned into other paper. But often it's mixed with a bunch of other things, right? Whether it's inks or different colors of paper, whether it's bleached or not.
Our carton is made with, well, so really the geek out, our carton is made with long fibers, which is very, which is extremely desirable in the recycling industry. So our cartons go, usually end up in toilet paper and tissue paper and that, the light use paper. So like Kimberly-Clark loves us and some of these, the companies that make toilet paper, that's where we end up 9 times out of 10. So
it stays within the water system. It's like you drink the water, the box then becomes toilet paper and that ends up in the plumbing and filter. Nice. Okay. So you were also talking about planting trees. So like that's obviously not something just like the box itself. It's not made of seed paper. So like you are like going out of your way to buy these planted trees, but you were mentioning that it has something to do with a hashtag and a campaign. So can you talk about a little bit about that?
No, I'm glad you brought that up because that's one of the key things. Again, trees are our celebrities. Gosh, 5 years ago or so, it's in our name. We're always looking for what can we do better? And instead of going out and finding a spokesperson, a Jennifer Aniston, and it goes back to being an entrepreneur. We came up with this great idea. It clearly, the box stands out on the shelf. So, and we've got award-winning water. We've got this purification system. So we, get on the shelf and it's just going to sell. It's going to blow out. And 5 years in, we're like, it's not, what are we doing wrong? We got a great product here. And so we thought, okay, instead of doing a bunch of advertising, let's build a community. Let's get people, like-minded people to come together and think about sustainability and helping the planet. And one of the people came up with a great idea. Well, actually came through 1% for the Planet. We are a member of 1% for the Planet. We went to them and they said the National Forest Foundation plants millions of trees every year. And they're always looking for awareness. And they're always looking for they're a nonprofit looking for help. So we partnered with them and we thought about doing what Tom's does. You buy a shoe, we donate a shoe, but we thought, well, A, we don't have much distribution for that. We're at a lot of festivals and stuff. So we're giving out product. Why don't we do it where you take a picture of our box, you do a hashtag Better Planet on Instagram or Facebook or whatever platform you're on, and we'll plant two trees. And it's stupid simple because at the end of every month, we look at the hashtag Better Planet and we count up how many times we see our box. And then as a result, we then call the National Forest Foundation and we say, hey, we got 100 trees to plant this month. Doing that stupid little thing, fast forward to now, we've planted over 1.2 million trees in the national forests. And national forests are great because they actually not only good for animals and habitat, but it's also the Earth's filtration system. So 90% of the rain goes through an aquifer that is one of the national forests in the country somewhere. So it all goes back to water again. But 1.2 million trees have been planted. And it's cool. If you go to the hashtag, we've built this whole community of people. You got parents who are teaching their kids about sustainability and they do, cute pictures with the kids. You've got artists that have done crazy things, not only with our box, but also in the background. You've got so many different voices coming together. It's beautiful because we've got people who we've got one of the highest engagement rates in all of social media. And as a water company, we're one of the highest followers. And again, it's not because we're a water company. It's like, hey, these people want to figure out what can we do to do better. And then in the last couple of years, we started, we used to do our own beach cleanups. Now we're working with some nonprofits, again, through 1%. And our goal is to clean 3,000 miles, coast to coast, 3,000 miles of beaches. Again, because plastic is the number one, number two, and number three piece of pollution that you find on a beach. So yeah, it's something that people reach for. It says it right here. It's you post, we plant. So you can see it right on our carton. And it's a way to differentiate. And it goes back to what our values are and what we stand for. And it's been probably the most exciting part of this job is doing that and then seeing how people react to it and seeing, like I said, Ellen comes to us because because of the reforestation. You know, you can choose any water you want, but hey, these guys are planting trees. I want to support that.
That's great. I don't know if the program that you're using. I don't know if the program that you're using counts for this, but I know that one of the newer kind of growing movements I was seeing in the Expo West, or at least the brands that go there, is the idea of carbon insetting, because obviously a lot of people are focused on carbon offsetting, right? Which is just, maybe I'm not going to reduce my impact or whatever, and I'm just going to pay someone to, like, you know, put up some windmills or something. But carbon insetting is actually going and, like, planting trees and rebuilding forests and doing different things like that. So that's kind of a growing movement that I wonder if your projects kind of qualify as that. That could be a good storytelling moment. I know there's a great company called Pure Projet that's helping companies like Alter Eco and Organic Valley and others kind of work on their carbon insetting. So something for everyone listening to check that out. And then you also mentioned your caps, which I didn't realize were also a new innovation on, like, a tree-based cap, which is huge. And I almost wonder if that qualifies as an upcycled product to some degree, because you were using kind of a byproduct or waste and turning it into something more useful. It wouldn't be upcycled food per se, but that's kind of a growing trend too, is this whole circular economy and upcycling things, bringing things to a higher use. And I wonder, can you tell me are those caps compostable as well? Because I know a lot of clients want to get into more and more compostable type containers, but often one of the things that holds it back is the zipper or the cap or something like that that's not going to be compostable.
Yeah. Unfortunately, no, it's not. It's still made out of oil, even though it's a plant-based, a tree-based oil. So it's still, I think it's called, it's PLA. It's still considered PLA plastic at the molecular level.
Gotcha. Unfortunately. Okay. Well, but that's an interest. At least it's renewable, right? And that's progress.
At least it's not being made from petroleum, and that's the start. There's five or six or things that I'd love to talk to you about that we're also trying to make it a little bit better. Compostable is one of our goals as well.
That's fun. Yeah, there's always new innovations to be done, but again, like we talked about, infrastructure, cost, and supply chain, and a million things that hold you back. Because a lot of our clients from my design agency, Modern Species, they all want to, like, of course, they want to be the best type of packaging you can possibly be right now, right? But the problem is the infrastructure is not there, the price isn't there, or whatever. And so I always encourage people, yes, completely sustainable or even regenerative package would be the goal, but you also have to be good with progress over perfection, because the system is so broken, perfection doesn't exist.
You actually well said. That is so much. We lasted for 8 years or 9 years with this petroleum based cap, and we hated it. And people beat us up on Instagram, and they should. We didn't like it either, but the technology wasn't there. There was not a viable alternative, and so we had better until we found that. And we're still only better. We're still not perfect. But to your point, perfect progress over perfection is the mantra. As long as you're doing a little bit better.
Yeah, exactly. So we should probably get wrapping up here. But before we go, I know you've got a deep history in kind of brands, marketing, CPG, et cetera. And Boxwater itself has been around for a while. So either from your own perspective or from a Boxwater case study perspective, if you could offer anyone listening, like, one piece of advice for how to build a better for the world brand, what would that be?
If it was one piece of advice, it would be persistence. Just keep going. And one of my favorite sayings is persistence breaks down resistance. Just keep going at it, because you will, if you are a challenger brand, you are going to come up to resistance every day. Every day there's going to be somebody who doesn't believe it, doesn't know it, hasn't heard of it, and that's fine. But you just keep at it. I can't tell you how many people we've talked to 5 years ago who are now back and saying, you know what, we... And especially if you're a pioneer, you're ahead of your time. You do not know if you're entering this market 10 years too early, 5 years too early, or right on. I doubt it's right on, especially if the idea hasn't come out yet. You know, there's four or five competitors in our world who have all started more recently than us, and that's okay. But they obviously started a little bit further down the line. So you have to be persistent, believe in what you have. Create a good story. Make sure that you tie the consumer in. And I think that's the best piece of advice, is always keep moving forward. Whatever you do, do not bemoan the losses. as long as you put your best foot forward, you can't dwell on the fact that you lost this account or this didn't happen or that. You just keep moving. As long as you put your best, say, I put the best into it, I'm not going to grieve. I'm going to move forward and try to take the next person.
Beautiful. Yeah, that's a great piece of advice, because especially if you're trying to innovate or change the world in some way, you're probably not going to be a overnight success. You're going to be one of those 10 or 20 year overnight successes, right? Where you've had to put so much work, laying the groundwork, changing laws, changing systems, raising awareness, et cetera, before you finally hit that tipping point and go to the moon, so to speak. So persistence, like knowing that you're kind of in this for the long haul, and just keep going, because most of these movements fail not because they weren't a good idea or they weren't going to work, but because people gave up energy, they burnt out, they gave up, right? Because of so much resistance. So having that persistence is smart.
You really never know where the goal line is. You for example, we're doing well, but we still haven't crossed. You don't know what your goal line is. So just keep going and enjoy the ride. I mean, know that you can sleep at night. I mean, I worked in the shoe industry for 30 years, and the Lord knows the world doesn't need more shoes. And it was great. But today I go to bed and I know that I've contributed to better forests, a better planet, cleaner air, saving dolphins. That's a great success in itself. So really enjoy the ride. Enjoy what you're doing. Do something you believe in. Enjoy it.
The dolphins of the world, the trees of the world. Thank you. And I thank you for what you're doing. And yes, drink box water. It's better. Hop on Alaska Airlines. You can try it for yourself, or go online, buy it, go to a grocery store.
Go to the Lapeer
Hotel. Do the hashtag.
Go to the proper hotel.
Plant some trees.
Well, actually, and I will say that, I'll give you two other pieces of advice, not that you asked for it, but no, it's a good point. It needs to be said, even though it's stupid, vote with your dollar. I mean, so we have partnered with a lot of really cool, like-minded companies like AG Jeans. They gave up their plastic water bottles and they only serve us in their stores, as well as, so AG Jeans, Rag & Bone, Alaska Air. These companies, if they're successful and sustainability is part of the success, not only will they put more into it, but their competitors are going to jump in on it. Because I know, talking to my buddies at Tom's, they started doing a lot of sustainable stuff, and all of a sudden it was so successful that they're like, we're tripled our offering in the sustainable, and we're cutting back on the other because the consumers are voting. So honest to God, make it part of your decision making just as a consumer, and you will reward those companies that are doing it.
Don't just try to drive change, but be part of that change. Yeah, that makes sense. Plus, you also build empathy for the customers you're asking to go the extra mile, right? Because I think we might have touched on this earlier, but if you're not willing to pay a little extra or put in the effort to whatever extra effort that more sustainable option takes, like putting it in the right recycling bin or whatever, but if you're not willing to do that, how are you going to ask your customers, your consumers to do it? So that makes total sense. Great. Well, this has been a fun conversation. I'm sure we could keep going for a long time, but better cut it off here. So again, thank you for everything you're doing. Thanks for taking some time out of your day to share your story here with myself and the community, and keep going, keep persisting. And I'm looking forward to seeing boxed water in more places.
I hope so. Thanks, Gage. This has been a great conversation. I really enjoyed it, and I appreciate the time.
Thank you. Cheers.
Cheers to you.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to learn more about Rob or Boxed Water is Better, go to boxedwaterisbetter.com. Subscribe to our podcast and YouTube channel for more innovator interviews, expert advice, and leadership discussions. If you like this episode, leave a heart, thumbs up, or review, and share it with your colleagues. As an ever-evolving show, we also love feedback, so send us your thoughts or ideas for who we should talk to next to evolve@modernspecies.com.